That you're here. It's a great blessing to be here this evening. To our visitors, thank you for being here. I want you to know that you are an encouragement to us, and we want to be an encouragement to you. And we all know the rules when the Dallas Cowboys are playing, and you know the score, don't tell me, right? We know that rule. Now, if you're waiting for news on the Titans, don't worry about it. It's not good news. I won't tell you the score, but I'm pretty sure it was bad. So you've lost all hope, right? And so I'm just saying, but don't tell me anything about the Cowboys. All right, now we're going to do a one word this evening. And of course, we're talking about the one word series because words matter, right? God and his wisdom. This is how he has decided to communicate his life-saving will to us by the use of words. And we want to understand what these words are, these biblical words, so we can put them into practice. We can understand them. We can apply them to our lives. Now, in the section that we're looking at, we're talking about our salvation. Now, the remainder of these in this section, we're going to kind of skip, because we've got some lessons that we're going to do that the young folks have worked on in between some of these. And so we'll carry on some one words into next year, Lord willing. As a matter of fact, all of the kids for Glance to Leaders that are doing PowerPoints, it's come to my attention, we think they got to do two of them, right, to meet the qualifications for Lads to Leaders. So what we might do is take some of the one words going into 2024 and let the kids that are working on those develop the PowerPoints for those one words. But anyways, Jack is doing the PowerPoint we're going to do in the lesson we worked on together we're going to do next Sunday evening. And we want to encourage him. And all of the young folks, when they are doing this, they're going to come in here and they're going to dress up a little bit nicer than normal, right? Hopefully he's going to wear a tie. And we're going to want him to know that we're thankful for his dedication and his work in helping with the PowerPoint and whatever kid we have in here when we're doing that. We want to build them up. We want to edify them. We want to encourage them. Right, and for the work that they're putting into this. So, anyways, we're going to kind of weave in some of those lessons with the one words and then carry it over into next year. But I want you to note here in this section, when we're talking about our salvation, justification, redemption, propitiation, and atonement. Now, a lot of these words here, they kind of overlap. Right? They're distinct in themselves, but they overlap and they carry some shared meaning. And we're going to see that especially with redemption and propitiation. Redemption and atonement. Redemption and justification. And then we're going to look at crucify. Now, of course, none of that, we wouldn't be able to be justified or redeemed or have that covering of propitiation or that at-one-ment with God if Jesus wasn't crucified to pay that price for us. Right? And if we don't crucify our old man and get into his crucifixion, right? And so they go together just in such an amazing way that I want us to see here. Now, with that being said, as we look at redemption here, I was trying to think of one of the better ways to help us understand this biblical word. So we're going to get technical for a little bit here. But I added in three little stories, which normally I don't do. But these short little stories, I think, here really highlight and really emphasize the meaning of these words. And so I want to start off with one little story here before we get into the meaning of this word in our Bibles. And you've probably never heard of this fella, Nicholas Winton. But he died in 2015 at the age of 106. In 1938, he decided to skip a vacation to Switzerland to help a friend who had called him from Czechoslovakia. When he arrived, he found that hundreds of Jewish children were destined to be transported to Nazi death camps. Working quickly, he organized the rescue of 669 children. He found homes for the children and arranged for their safe passage to Britain. And the world wouldn't find out about his work until some 40 years later in 1988. And the surviving children ended up making their way to London, and they honored him with a surprise gathering here. And there's a statue of Winton in London, a very prominent statue by the main railway station there, and also one in Prague, now the Czech Republic. And you know, it's stories like that, that is little snippets of it, that help us see what this word redemption means, right? And his rescue of those children was all about redemption. And so when we think about this word redemption here, and don't let these Hebrew words or these Greek words throw you off, I think it helps us to get a little technical with these words here, but it's all about a purchase, right? And it's like how the book of Hosea ends, right? With Gomer, if you're familiar, if it's been a while since you've looked at Hosea. Hosea, his name means God's salvation, and how he redeemed Gomer, right? And she was up on the auction block, and there were no takers. And her price went all the way down to that of half the price you'd pay for a wounded slave. I think it was 20 shekels. No one would redeem her, but Hosea, God's salvation, he steps up and says, I'll purchase her. Right now, Hosea in that teaching is Jesus, and we're the ones up on the auction block. Right? And Jesus says, I'll pay the purchase price. You know, I'll redeem you, Sean. And so I want us to think about that in our minds when we're thinking about these words, and, you know, and I don't want to get lost in all the technical terms or the Hebrew and all that kind of thing, but I want you to think about that redemption. Right now, Old Testament, several different words that, depending on your translation, but for the most part, they're translated as redeem, in their verb forms anyway, but it means to deliver, to avenge, or to act as a kinsman, right? And for example, when Jacob blesses Joseph's children in Genesis 48 and verse 16, he uses this word here. When he says, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, right? And the idea is that God delivered him from all harm, right? And if an Israelite became poor, now we'll read a little bit in Leviticus 25 here in a moment. But if someone became poor back in that time, in that age, in that culture, they would either sell a relative or they'd even sell themselves. I can't pay my bills. I'm going to sell me to you as your servant, as your slave. And then a near relative or a kinsman could redeem them out of that bondage. Right, and so that's how this word is used in a literal sense. Sometimes it's referring to, look at this here if you have your Bible, in Numbers 35. Right, sometimes this word means to avenge, or it might even be translated in your Bible as the avenger of blood. Like here in Numbers 35, we see it, this very same word, ga'al in the Hebrew, Numbers 35 and verse 12. They shall be cities of refuge for you from the avenger, that the manslayer may not die until he stands before the congregation in judgment, right? Or a trial at a justice system. Verse 19, same chapter. The avenger of blood. That's the same Hebrew word, ga'al. Sometimes it's translated as avenger. Sometimes it's translated as redeemer, right? Or an act of a kinsman. And the idea was, if somebody killed someone else, the person that was killed, someone in their family would act as an avenger or a kinsman, avenger, redeemer, to get that, to pay off that blood, if you will. And so that's what Numbers 35 is all about. So anyways, just wanted to throw that in there. But the word is most often used to describe what God does, right? Like in the Song of Moses, in Exodus 15, I think in verse 13. But the idea here I want you to think about is most of the time this word is used in reference to what God does. Isaiah uses this word actually a lot. Sometimes the word is used physical redemption as well as spiritual redemption, spiritual deliverance, right? And you see that in several places in the Psalms. But the next main word, let me move on here. The next main word in the Hebrew is padah, which means to redeem or to ransom. And lots of times you'll still see that as your English translation, right? But this more carries the idea of someone's intervening on the behalf of somebody else. Like when Saul, I guess we won't read it, but in 1 Samuel 14, Saul makes a rash vow, right? Nobody can eat until I have vengeance on my enemies. Well, Jonathan didn't hear that rash vow, and Jonathan has been in battle. He sees some honey, he eats some honey, and then Saul's like, well, I guess I got to kill him. But then it says that the people redeemed Jonathan, right? The people stepped and said, no, you're not going to kill Jonathan, even though you made this rash vow, right? So the people rescued, your translation might say rescued or redeemed, but that's that word there. They rescued Jonathan so that he did not die. And in the next word here, which is probably one we're a little more familiar with, is Kippur, Yom Kippur. Right, Israel's in the news a lot lately. Hamas attacked, I think it was the day after Yom Kippur. I might be wrong. But anyways, you can go back to, I think in 1973, the Yom Kippur War. Right, when Egypt and Syria and everything invaded, they did it on Yom Kippur. Why is that? Well, it's a big deal. It's one of their main holidays. Right, and it's been that way for thousands of years. What is Yom Kippur? Well, it's a Day of Atonement. What's one of our one words we're going to look at? We're going to look at the word atonement. So we'll talk a little bit more about this this word when we get to atonement and propitiation. But it's that that special day one time in the year where the high priest would go into the Holy of Holies, sprinkle blood on the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant for the sins of the people of Israel. Right? And it's Kippur. That's that word there, to ransom, to atone, to expiate, right? It's that idea of a ransom. But most time it's translated that I've noticed is either forgive or pardon, right? We know what a pardon is, right? Sometimes you'll have someone on death row and their time is, it's almost there. It's the clock is almost striking midnight and the governor will call and he says, don't do it. You know, and stop the execution, or sometimes there's a presidential pardon, right? And whatever it was, it's gone. It's forgiven. I'd like you to really think about this word here. Most of the time it describes that sacrificial, the sacrificial rites of the priests. Right, it's used to describe the deliverance of things or people who'd been sold into debt. Again, Leviticus 25, which we'll read in a moment. So let's talk about it real quick in the New Testament. New Testament Greek. Now you have lutrosis and you have apolutrosis. Same word, but the apo kind of strengthens the lutrosis. And what does that mean? Well, it means a deliverance. It means a releasing, right? So when we see this word, redemption, in our New Testament, that's usually what it's talking about,
a deliverance or a releasing.
You know, in Matthew 10 and verse 28, the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but rather he came to serve, it says there, and to give his life as a ransom. That's that word, apolutrosis, in your New Testament. And it always carries with it the idea of a price being paid. And you see that again in Mark chapter 10 and verse 45. All right, now we're going to read a handful of passages here, but here's an illustration. When we think about this word redemption, right? And just bear with this. I think it really helps highlight here once you get to the end of the story. So Sergeant Dennis Weichel was a U.S. soldier who in March 2012 gave his own life to save an Afghan girl. Weichel, a Rhode Island National Guardsman, was riding along in a convoy in Lagman Province in eastern Afghanistan when some children were spotted on the road ahead. And the children were picking up shell casings, and that's what they do. They'd get them, and you could recycle them. And they actually made, for that those areas, they make a halfway decent living. And they'd go in very dangerous places to get these shell casings. And so you have this little girl in the road there picking up these shell cases. But the problem is there's lots of vehicles, right? And here it was an MRAP, several MRAPs, the mine resistance, big, kind of funny V-shaped looking vehicles. You can't see very well when you're driving them. And so she was picking up these shell casings. She was going back on and off the road. And so he was on the side of the road, and he saw her run in front of an MRAP. And he basically jumped, dove in front of the MRAP, and threw her out of the way, but he got ran over, right? And he ended up dying from his injuries, right? And that's redemption, right? Someone is intervening to save you, right? That's the idea in the New Testament, lutrosis, apolutrosis, right? Someone's going to deliver you. Someone's going to step in, you know, release you from that harm, from that danger, and of course, an application to us from sin, right? And the damaging consequences of sin. So with that in mind here, I want to read just a few passages. I'm trying to approach this word a little different than our other one words, Leviticus 25. So in Leviticus chapter 25, this contains a description of redemption, right? We're going to actually see the word, and your translation might be a little bit different. But this is when God gives a command surrounding the sale of land in the year of Jubilee. And the key Hebrew root for the concept of redemption, this is that first word, ga'al. But let me just read verses 23 through 28. The land shall not be sold permanently, for the land is mine, for you are strangers and sojourners with me. And in all the land of your possession you shall grant redemption of the land, right? A releasing, right? And verse 25, if one of your brethren becomes poor and has sold some of his possessions, and if his redeeming relative comes in to redeem it, there's that kinsman, then he may redeem what his brother sold. Or if the man has no one to redeem it, but he himself becomes able to redeem it, then let him count the years since its sale and restore the remaining to the man to whom it was sold, that he may return to his possession. Verse 28, but if he is not able to save it, but if he was not able to have it restored to himself, then what was sold shall remain in the hand of him who bought it until the year of Jubilee, and in the Jubilee it shall be released, and he shall return to his possession. So there's a good passage where you see this idea. Another one, 2 Samuel in your Old Testament, 2 Samuel 7, right? And this is part of the redemptive narrative in the story of God. This is where the promise to David, just like the promise to Abraham, was made. And, and actually verse 13, it speaks of the coming of Jesus, the Redeemer, right?
and his church. We're not going to read it all here, but in 2 Samuel 7, 23 and 24, and who is like your people, like Israel, the one nation on earth whom God went to redeem for himself as a people, to make for yourself a name, and to do for yourselves great and awesome deeds for your land, before your people whom you redeemed for yourself from Egypt, the nations and their gods. For you have made your people Israel your very own special forever, and you, Lord, have become their God. So we see it there, and this is describing the redeeming work of God. Right, the whole chapter, really, if you were to back up, using this language, actually using the root word that we looked at, padah. And so we see it in that sense. One more Old Testament passage, Deuteronomy chapter 32. Right, and this depicts the vengeance of God and atonement for his people. Deuteronomy 32 and verse 43. Rejoice, O Gentiles, with his people, for he will avenge the blood of his servants and render vengeance to his adversaries, and he will provide atonement or redemption, depending on what translation you're reading out of, for his land and his people. Right? And so we see it used in that sense there. Now in the New Testament, we're going to begin to wind down here in just a moment. I think a key passage for us to understand, we're talking about redemption, is in Titus. Titus chapter 2 and verse 14. And again, please don't get lost in some of the technicals here with some of these words. Remember, if we can just remember one main thing, it's about you needed to be redeemed, right? And only Jesus could redeem you. He was the only one willing to pay that purchase price. Right? You're that slave in bondage on the auction block. No one could or would purchase you, but Jesus, God's salvation, stepped up and said, I'll buy you. Right? You're valuable to me. So let's just remember that. But in Titus chapter 2, verse 14, speaking of Christ, who gave himself for us, there's a redemption clause, right? That he might redeem us from every lawless deed and purify for himself his own special people, zealous for good works, right? Remember the word of redemption there in Deuteronomy? And God was saying that to Israel, right? His own special people, right? We are now spiritual Israel. We are his own special people, right? We've been redeemed. So that's a very important passage. Working our way backwards here. Ephesians 1, verses 7 and 8. Verse 7 is my favorite passage, I think, in the entire Bible. And we see this word being used here, right? Ephesians 1, verse 7, in him we have redemption through his blood, right? That's where redemption comes from. That releasing, that ransom being paid, right? It's through his blood. And so Paul reminds us here, the forgiveness of sins according to the riches of his grace. Now that's important when we read one of our final passages in Romans 3 here in a moment. Right, and verse 8, which he made to abound toward us in all wisdom and prudence. Right, and so Paul here describes our redemption through the blood of Christ. Now, when we talk about propitiation, that's going to matter also, because that means a covering. But here he's going to use apolutrosin, that deliverance, a purchase, a deliverance from what? Well, sin. A deliverance from sin. And so let's go ahead and finish up in Romans chapter 3. Galatians 3, 26, 27 is a good place also. Actually, the whole chapter, Galatians 3, 13 and 14, is a good place if you're taking notes also. But I wanted to end here in Romans and then read a little bit of one more story for you, and the lesson is yours. And this is, we've talked a lot about this in our Wednesday Bible class. We've been looking in great detail at Romans. And for those of you that have been able to be a part of that, all the way up to verse 23, well, of course, first in chapter 1, we get a description of what the gospel is. But beginning in chapter 1, verse 18, all the way to chapter 3 and verse 23, the topic is sin. Right? Gentiles get a sin problem. Jews got a sin problem. Hey, all of you got a sin problem. All of us, right? For we all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Now, who does all include? It includes all of us. Right? And the first step, I think, in gaining redemption is an acknowledgement of my sin problem. Right? I've got an issue. I need deliverance. I can't deliver myself. I'll never be good enough to earn deliverance. Right? No one else out there has the ability to offer me deliverance. No one else can offer me pardon for my sin except for Jesus. And now here I want you to pay attention because we're going to get several of these one words that we're looking at when we're talking about our salvation here. So in verse 24, being justified, we talked about that last week. That means God is going to look at you just as if you've never sinned. Right? Something occurred. Right? And that's when you came into contact with the blood of Christ. So now you're justified in the eyes of God. So being justified freely, this is all by His grace. Grace is a gift you don't deserve. Right? But it's being offered through the redemption. There's our word for this evening. That is in Christ Jesus. We get that releasing through Christ, and it all resides under the umbrella of His grace, where He looks at us just as if we've never sinned. In verse 25, we're going to get a word for next week. Well, no. 2 weeks from now, I guess. Whom God set forth as a propitiation, a covering. What did that? Well, it was by His blood. Keep reading. Through faith. What's faith? It's trust. It's obedience coming together. I trust You, God. I trust Your plan. I respond to Your plan. I need that blood of Christ to cover me, to redeem me, to purchase me. Right? So I can be justified in Your eyes. Right, so through faith to demonstrate His righteousness, because in His forbearance God had passed over the sins that were previously committed to demonstrate at the present time His righteousness, that He might be just and the justifier of the one who has faith in Jesus. Let me add in here verse 27. Where is the boasting then? It is excluded. By what law? Of works? No, but by the law of faith. Now, I want to give you one more little story here about redemption. But I want you to have in your mind the statement that He made there, law of faith. There's a law of faith. There's a standard of faith. There's a standard of trust and obedience that God has set forth in His wisdom because He loves you so that you can respond to that and get that justification, to get that redemption, to get that propitiation, to get that atonement or that one-ment with God. It's all possible because of the crucifixion of Jesus. So then the question becomes, will you crucify your old man of sin to be redeemed? All right, one last story here, and the lesson is yours. I want you to think about this. And this is NBC reported this following story. This is back from 2014. But an 8-year-old boy is credited with saving 6 people from the fire that would ultimately claim his life. Tyler, a 4th grader at East Rochester Elementary School, didn't have class on Monday, a holiday, so he was sleeping over with several other people at his grandfather's trailer. The trailer caught fire about 4:45 a.m., probably because of an electrical problem, the Penfield Fire Department said. Tyler went through the trailer and was able to wake up 6 people, including 2 other children, ages 4 and 6, who all made it out alive. But Tyler went back in to try to help save his uncle, Stephen Smith, who used a wheelchair because he had lost part of his leg. They both didn't make it out. Right? And you know, redemption, it's all about rescue. And the thing about it is, I need to understand, it is costly. Right? Sometimes it's costly, and in our rescue and our redemption, it costs the very life and the blood of God in the flesh. So the question for each of us this evening is this: have you been redeemed? Have you been redeemed by the blood of the Lamb? And that's something you need to truly consider. Have you been redeemed? Have you obeyed the gospel? Have you responded to that law of faith that Paul writes about in Romans 3:27? It's not about just having a warm fuzzy in your heart, believing in Jesus. It's about you trusting and obeying. That's what faith is, a responsive faith, right? And we do that in response to that gospel, the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, right? Putting on Christ in baptism. Have you done that? If not, there's nothing more important in this world that you need to study above that. That is the most critical thing. And if that's something you're willing to study, to look at, you haven't done that, or you're not sure, let me know. Let me know. Let's take a look at that. It's important. If you've done that and you've fallen away and you need to be reconciled to God, and we can help you with that, we'd love to do that. Love to show you the love of God, show you the love of this church family. So if you have a spiritual need at all this evening, please let someone know as we stand, as we sing.